Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Nun Bet Amud Aleph, four lines down. The Gemara is still discussing the machloka between Abaye and Rava with regards to Kedushin, She'enu Misurin the Biyah, Kedushin that cannot result in a consummation of the marriage, where Abaye says they still are valid Kedushin, and Rava says they are invalid Kedushin. So Gemara is bringing proofs to Abaye's position, or very against Rava's position. So far we've been able to answer on behalf of Rava on each of the instances. Tashma, the Tanitev Yumei, L'zeh chamisha banim, u'l'zeh chamisha banot. This individual has five sons, and this individual has five daughters. V'amar, achat mibnotecha mikudeshet l'achad mibanai. One of your daughters is to marry to one of my children. Kol achat v'achat shricha chamisha gitin. Every one of them needs five gitin, because we don't know which son and which daughter are married. So every son has to present a get to every one of the other party's daughters. Meit echad mehem. If one of the brothers passes away, kol echad v'echad tzricha arba'a gitin, then the five sisters, every one of them requires four gitin from the four remaining brothers that are alive. V'chalitza me'echad mehem. And out of those four brothers, one of them has to do chalitza with the woman in case this woman was married to the brother who passed away, and then she is a yivama now, and so get wouldn't help. You need chalitza to release her in this instance. V'chitema hachanami. So we'll answer like we answered in all the other instances. This is a case where they knew up front and then they forgot or they didn't know in the back end. Over there it does not ever specify which one or give specifications. It simply says one of my sons to one of your daughters. It seems ambiguous from the start, as if that was the nature of the shiduchim that were established over here. Tiyufta derava tiyufta. This is a very strong refutation of Rava's position that kedushim shein misurin the biyah inan kedushin. Here it seems they are kedushin, and we have to give gitin to each one of them because of the fact that there is kedushin. Therefore, behilchata kavate de abaye biyal kagam. So we noted at the beginning of the sugya, in general, when you have machloket abaye and Rava, halacha kirava, there are six exceptions to that rule, and that is yal kagam. That is the acronym for the six places by which we do paskin like Abaye over Rava. And this is one of those six items, which is kuf, kiddushin, she'enan, misurin, nebiyah. Rashi here lists the six items that we find in Shas. Yud is yeush shalomidat, which is the sugya in Baba Metzia, about whether Baalim can relinquish control over an object, even though they don't know the object is lost. Can we assume that the Baalim have given up hope of getting it back, despite the fact that they're not even informed about the fact that the object is missing, because there's an anan sadeh, that any person in that position would have given up hope, and therefore we assume that's the case. That's Yeh Shalom Idat. Eid Zomeim, there's a machloket as to whether it is Mikanul Abahu Nifsal, prospectively an Eid Zomeim becomes Pasul, or Limafreya Haim Psulim, Abai says Limafreya, we pass in like a Abai. Lechi omeid me'elav, that's the lamed, which is a lechi that happens by itself. It wasn't placed there intentionally, but it stays, it was there, and naturally, does that work as a lechi? Kiddushin shlo nimsirim the biyah is number four, which is what we're discussing over here. Gulu data begito, that expressing or understanding beget. Mumar ochel nevelot to the hachis, or a mumar who eats nevelot, not out of desire, but because they are anti, and therefore they eat nevelot. And all of those machlokot between Abaye and Rava, the locha is like Abaye. You can see in the Balei Tosafot over here that it's not clear what the lamed is. He brings down the lamed that Rashi is bringing the list of the geunim as to what the six items are. The Rabbeinu Tam says that Mefereish lamed haynu yimei leida sheinu rabehen sheinu lim lesfirat zivata. The Mare in Nida, which discusses a woman who has given birth in the time period where she's not seeing Dam, whether that can count towards her time period of Ziva, if she was Yoledet B'Ziva. And so that Machloket is the Lamed, Leida, that is the Lamed. Whereas the Bnei Narbona says that the Lamed is the Pukta of Kol Sha'al Gemar in Psachim, which says, Lo Efshar V'lo Mikam Mekavein. It's a case where he's in a circumstance where it's unavoidable for him to benefit, but he has no intent in benefiting from it. For instance, he walks on a road where the smell of the incense of Avodah Zarah is coming out. So it's impossible to avoid the smell, because if you walk on that road, you're going to have the smell. And he has no other option besides to walk on that road. But he doesn't have any intent to get bun off from it. Is that considered to be problematic? Was that not problematic? That's a machloka de bayin rov in the Gemara M'sachim. And again, there we have a locha ke abaye. So those are the alternatives for the lamed in the yal kagam, according to the Balei HaTosafot. Tosafot also points out that there's another instance where we don't count this in the yal kagam, even though the locha is like abaye, which is tchilato b'pshia v'sofu bonus, where we say that the locha is like abaye, and you are chayav. Nevertheless, Tosafot points out that even though the Gemara there says hilchato ke abaye, he thinks that that's an addition of the Rabbanan Sabaraim, which is that there are, after the period of the Amoraim and the closing of the Gemara, before the period of the Geonim, there's an interim period which is called the Sabaraim, or the Rabbanan Sabarai. Their main job was to copy over the Gemara and to disseminate the Gemara once it was closed by creating copies of the Gemara and distributing it so that the Gemara became the closing of the period of the Amoraim. And that's what the Rabbanan Sabarai do. Obviously, it's an important job in terms of getting us copies of the Gemara, and accurate copies of the Gemara. But in addition to that, the Sabaraim sometimes added in their own little comments or own little lines. And therefore, Tosafot suggests that when it says Halacha Ke'abaye, or Hilchata Ke'abaye by the Ge'abay, Tchilata B'Shiyah B'Sof Onis, he thinks that was an addition of the Rabbanan Sabarai. It was not a part of the Gemara, and that's why it's not included in Yal Kagam, despite the fact that the Locha is Ki Abaye. Now, the fact that the Locha is Ki Abaye has impact, and Tosafot brings a very interesting case that the Rabbeinu Tam presided over, which is Maase Balifnei Rabbeinu Tam Bibnosha Rabbeinu Oshaya Alevi. The son of Oshaya Alevi, Shekidesh Bata Shirachat, that he got married to the daughter, one of the daughters of this wealthy individual. So it was a shidduch between a great Talmud Chacham's son and a wealthy individual. So obviously that would allow the son to sit and learn and to continue in the ways of his father. So he married into this wealthy family. Belo perish plonit bitcha. But he never specified which of the daughters he was going to marry. So over here, the Rabbeinu Tam says, "V'amar Rabbeinu Tenu demikudeshet," that they are married. V'lo mibayim shidech b'achad mehem b'shem. The case of him being married to the daughter is not only in a case where they had a prior discussion about this, and there was some sort of setup saying that this daughter and this son would get together, and then he did the kiddushim, because then clearly when he does the kiddushim, it's based or premised on the shidduch that was read before that. But even in a case where there was no shidduch, b'shem, ela, shinitratzu b'peh, there wasn't any official shidduch or tanaim that were put together, but rather, they had an oral agreement, a verbal agreement between them about that I'm looking at this daughter, and that would be sufficient to determine that the kiddushin are connected specifically to that daughter, and we don't make it into a case where he's married to all of the daughters, we have a safek about the daughters. And he says it's all based on this idea, the Sherit Yisrael Yasu Avla V'lo Yidabru Chazav, that Jews have to be honest and they have to stand by their word. And therefore, if there was any discussion beforehand, you have to stand by that discussion or you have to keep your word. And if the Kiddushin were accepted, you can't change the terms of the Kiddushin, even though there was no official agreement, but there was just discussions beforehand. It's clear that the Kiddushin are premised on those discussions and people have to be honest and forthright about these issues. But then he says, even if there were no discussions at all, and there was no shidduchim beforehand, you can assume it was the eldest daughter. Because, lo yaseh kein bimkomeinu, what Lavan says to Yaakov, we don't marry off the younger daughter before the older daughter. So by definition, or by default, it would revert to the oldest daughter. That's what Rabbeinu Tam says. Rabbeinu Menachem Miyoni nechleku alav, argued on Rabbeinu Tam, and he says, if that's the case, then why in all these situations by Abaye do we not say that even though the Kedushin are tofes, because Abaye says Kedushim Shein Misurin the Bia are tofes, but he still says there's a safek. Even Abaye, who disagrees with Rava, still says that when you have Kedushin in these situations, it's a safek, and you have to have a get to all of the parties involved. If Rabbeinu Tam is right, why is there a safek in all these cases? We should always assume it's the eldest daughter because lo yasekein b'mkomeinu. And therefore, af Rabbeinu Tam chazar bo, v'lo avar uvda. Rabbeinu Tam was chozer from that position and never passed in the halacha in that manner because of this ha'ara of the Rabbeinu Menachem Yuni, who noted the fact that you can't say that lo yasekein b'mkomeinu is sufficient grounds to say the kedushin are specifically associated with the eldest daughter, because of the fact that all of our Gemarot then would not have a safek and say you need gitin for all the girls and from all the boys that are involved, because we would have assumed that it was the oldest girl that was involved, and that would limit the safek or take away the safek completely. The fact that Gemara does not say that shows you that the Rabbeinu Tam's assumption is incorrect, at least with regards to the eldest daughter. Again, if there were discussions beforehand or shidduch beforehand, it's clear that the kiddushin are relying on that and one has to abide by that discussion or those commitments that they made beforehand. Right, Maaseh b'chamesh nashim, this is the latter half of the Mishnah, the incident with the five women. Amar Rav, Shmami Nami Matnitin Arba. There are four things that you could derive from our Mishnah. B'nakid Rav b'yadei talat. But Rav could only walk away with three of them. Three out of the four, Rav is able to come to a conclusion about. The fourth one, where he agrees there is such a diuk at the Mishnah, he's not sure which way the diuk goes. Shmami Na, amikadesh b'perot shvit mikudeshet. The first thing is that if you use Perot Shvit and you get married with Perot Shvit, it works, because that's the case in the Mishnah. He uses a basket full of Perot from Shvi'it. Now, what is the Havamina that it shouldn't work? Rashi brings two possibilities as to what the problem is. You would think that Perot Shvit, because they are Hefker, maybe he can't take possession of them. The answer is that Perot Shvit, once he takes possession, once he's picked the Perot Shvit, which are Hefker, they become his monetary ownership sufficiently that he can marry with that item. That's one possibility. Inami, delo teima lo achla amar chachmano, velo l'schora, or lo l'dvar acher. There's a diuk that the Gemara makes out of Perot Shvi, which says lo achla. They're only available to you to be eaten. You're allowed to eat Perot Shvi, you're not allowed to do business with Perot Shvi, you're not allowed to do other things with Perot Shvi. Their singular designation is for eating. So you would thought over here, maybe it should fail the kiddushin because of achla below the schara or achla below the davar acher. Nevertheless, we say it goes through. Now Tosfot points out, because that is hanei mile the chatchila, that we say the achla below the schara, that's only the chatchila. About bidyavad, a mekach kayam. If you do such a thing, even though it's not legal or it's not proper, the transaction goes through. And so for the same reason, v'chein gabi isha bidyavad mekudeshet. So too, by the woman, bidyavad, she is married because of the fact that even though there's a restriction against using it for other items besides achila, bidyavad, if you do use it, it works. And the kedushin go through. So that is the way that they explain it. Others explain the possibility that the hefker of the peirot, which is a machloket as to whether that is, that the balim have to be mafkirit, or whether that's afkata demalko, meaning that a Kodesh Baruch Hu creates or forces it to be Hefker l'gamrei, then you would have thought that once Hashem makes it Hefker, we're going to see later on in the Gemara, then maybe Mishulchan Gvoa Kazochu, that when you take the Perot Shvit, you're not getting them from Hefker and then you're taking ownership of them. You're simply getting a gift from Hashem and you're eating from Hashem's table. You're like a guest at Hashem's table. The similar thing that we say by Kodashim. When it comes to Kodashim, we don't say that's yours. We say that Hashem grants you the right to eat at his table from the Kodashim. And for that reason, it doesn't work by Kiddushin. Because you're not an owner, you're simply a guest. So maybe you would suggest the same thing by Perut Shvit. The Kamash Balan is, no, that Perut Shvit work and that you get full ownership over them. The second item is, Shmamina, Kidsha B'Gezel Eina Mikudeshet. That if you marry with something that's a stolen item, it doesn't work. Afilu B'Gezel Tida. Even if the item was stolen from the woman herself. Mimai, how do you know that? Because of the diuk out of the Mishnah. Miktani shelahem haita, v'shel shvi'it haita. It was their fruits, and it was shvi'it. Time of the shvi'it, the hefker hu. The only reason it goes through is because it is shvi'it, and it's hefker, and therefore he can take possession of it. Ha, d'shar shani, shvua, lo. It was any other year of the 7-year cycle, it wouldn't have worked. Even though he stole the item from her. Because you would have thought, again, here the havamina is, that when he gives the item back to her, she, in accepting it as kiddushin, is mukhelet on the gzela, and therefore, simultaneously, he gains ownership, and the kiddushin can go through. Shmamina, that doesn't work. That if it's gezel dida, that even if he gives it back to her as kiddushin, it doesn't work. Shmamina, The third thing that we say is, Isha nasit shliach lechaverta, that a woman can be a proxy agent for her friend, afilu b'makom shenasit latzara, even in an instance where they become co-wives. Now, as Rashi points out here, the havamino is that because they are co-wives, and in other instances, their edut is not believed. I mean, a co-wife is not believed to testify that the husband passed away because she has a vested interest in hurting the other party. And because of that, she loses her nemanut, her believability in that instance, because she is nogea badavar. So we would have suggested or possibly thought over here also. Maybe she cannot act as an agent on behalf of this woman because she is a co-wife. The Kamash Milan is, over here it works, despite the fact that she is a co-wife, because it is to her detriment, but the action of the ma'asir makes it obvious about what's happening over here. And number two is, it's to her detriment, and therefore she's not hurting the other party, she's only hurting herself. And so because of that, she can be an agent in this instance and act on behalf of the other woman. The other point to be made is that in a case where she's accepting kiddushin both on behalf of herself and on behalf of the co-wife, we don't just assume when she accepts the kiddushim stam, she only has herself in mind, and that she doesn't do it as a proxy for the other parties. That she forgoes her fiduciary duty as an agent for the other parties and simply accepts the kiddushin on behalf of herself. The answer is no, that when she accepts the kiddushin and she doesn't specify otherwise, and the individual is saying, I want to marry you and other all these other women, her acceptance is on behalf of herself and all of these other women, and we assume that she has performed their shlichut, or agency, in this case. Vidachmai. What's the fourth thing that would be meduyak out of the Mishnah that Rav does not accept necessarily? Kiddushin shein misurin nebiya. That is exactly our discussion between Abai and Rava. Kiddushin shein misurin nebiya. Benechshiva. So why doesn't he count that? Bishum desfekalei ikabai ikarova. It's not sure whether it is meduyak like Abai or meduyak like Rava. So as Rashi points out over here, it's clear that the Mishnah is talking about a case of Kiddushin She'en Misurin Nebiya. The question is, what is the outcome or what is the Mishnah's view on that? Because you can read the Mishnah one of two ways. You can read the Mishnah that when you marry two Achayot, then that is problematic. But Achat Mishtei Achayot, had you said one out of the two, it would have worked. And that would be like Abaye, that Kiddushin She'en Misurin Nebiya are fine. And the Kiddushin go through. That could be one diuk out of the Mishnah. Or the other diuk of the Mishnah could be like Rova. That when it says, Mishtei Achayot, it means Achat Mishtei Achayot, one out of two sisters, and it fails. Why? Because it's Kedushim, Shein Misurin, the Biyah. And according to Rova, that fails. So Rav's not sure which diuk is better out of the Mishnah. There's definitely a diuk about Kedushim, Shein Misurin, the Biyah. He's just not sure which way the Mishnah leans based on the Lashon. I mean, Abai explained it and Rova explained it. And we knew that there was a diuk in favor of each one of them. And Rav is left with, I don't know which one is better. Not to say that the halacha is not like Abaye, because even if the halacha is like Abaye, it doesn't mean that the Mishnah is necessarily meduyak like Abaye. It could also be read or equally read like Rava, because that's not the proof that sways us to favor Abaye's position. That was brought from a Braita later on. Our Mishnah is not definitive, and that's what Abaye says. Yes, the information is there, but I can't determine whether it favors Abaye's explanation or Rava's explanation. Kisalik Rabbi Zeira, Amar Lahashmaitza Dakamed Rabbi Yochanan. When Rabbi Zeira went up to Eretz Yisrael, he brought this memra of Rav to Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was in Eretz Yisrael, brings Rav's diukim out of the Mishnah. The one that we're focused on over here is Gezel, that you can't get married with Gezel. Amar Lei, mi Amar Rav Hochi? Because, did Rav really say this? So the Gemara's assumption over now is that he's asking, how could Rav say this? Because Rabbi Yochanan would disagree with that. Va'olo Amar? And the Gemara says, wait a minute, doesn't Rabbi Yochanan also subscribe to the same position as Rav? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Gazal, v'lo nitnashu ba'alim, a person steals something, and the ba'alim have not given up hope yet of getting it back, neither of them can make it into Ektish. Zeh lefi she'enu shelo, the Gazlan can't do this because it's not his. The ba'alim haven't given up hope of giving it back, that means that they can't take ownership over this item. They can't take ownership of the item, they can't be makdish it because it's not theirs to be makdish. The Baalim, even though they're the full-fledged owners of it, they don't have control over the item because it's not in their possession. The Gazlan is holding it. In order to be Makdish something, Rabbi Yochanan says you need both control and ownership. Each one of them is lacking one of these features, and therefore they can't be Makdish it. So if that's the case, seemingly this is the exact same case as our Kiddushin. By Gezel, he can't get married with the Gezel because There is Gezel and Lo Nitiashu Abalim. There's no Yehush Balim over here. And therefore it's not his. If it's not his, he can't get married with it. It sounds like Rabbi Yochanan says the exact same thing as Rav. So Gemara says, Hochi Kamarle. This is what he meant to say, or this is what he meant when he said this. Mi Amar Rav Kavati? Does Rav really say like me? Meaning that Rav is supporting what I believed all along, that when you have Gezel without Yehush Balim, that Gezel does not become yours enough to be Makdishit, or not enough of yours in order to be Mikadesh Anisha with that item. He had Kiddushim with Gezel, Chamas, and Gneva. What are the difference between these? Gezel is where you steal in the open daylight. Person takes the item. Chamas, as Rashi notes over here, is Chamsan Yayv Dmei Al Korchosha Balach Chifetz, that you pay for the item, but you don't ask whether the guy wants to sell it or not. You buy it against his will. So you provide capital for it or payment for it, but you do not seek the acquiescence of the seller of the object. Gneva is something that was stolen under cover of night or without the knowledge of the party that you're stealing from. O shechatav sela miyada, or he grabbed the seller right out of her hand, v'kidsha, and then he uses it to marry her, mikudeshet. It works. Now you have a braita that is both against Rav and Rabbi Yochanan's positions over here. Hatam begezel dida. Over there, we're talking about her gezel, meaning that he stole from her. And that's what makes the difference. So the Gemara says, Rav miktani seifa o shechatav sela mishala. That the latter part of that braita seems to say it's a case where he pulled it out of her hand. Makes it sound like the first three cases are cases where she wasn't stolen from. It was a third party that he stole from. It says, no, perush kamefaresh. That latter piece is explaining or modifying, qualifying the first three cases. What are these cases? Kagon. Shechatav selam yada v'kidshabo. Case where he grabbed or swiped a sell out of her hand, and he was mikadesh her with that sella. So now the Gemara here differentiates between gezel dida and gezel stam, saying that when it's gezel stam, you cannot do kiddushin with it, but when it's gezel from her, when he gives it back to her, there's an assumed michila in the return of the item, and that assumed michila allows him to get married with that item. The only problem is, if you remember, we already noted in our Mishnah that the case of our Mishnah is also Gezel Dida because he picked the fruits out of their fields. It happened to be Shvi'it. That's why they were Hefker. But it wasn't Shvi'it. It was Gezel Dida. So then why shouldn't it work? Our Mishnah is a case of Gezel Dida, but come Rav, ain't a mikudeshet. That it doesn't work. Lo kashra, that's not a problem. Had the shadich, had the lo shadich. Depends on what the nature of the conversations were prior to him being mikadesh the isha with the gezel. If there was already shiduchin, there was already some sort of determination that they were going to get married or an agreement that they were going to get married, and then he swipes and he gives it to her, but she accepts it as kiddushin, then there's an implicit mechila because of the context in which it's done. If there are no previous conversations between them, she can say, listen, I'm taking it back because it's mine. I don't have to answer you about the kiddushin. So the point is that he answered to her as kiddushin, she says nothing. So when she says nothing, is that silence acquiescence? In the case of a context in which there was already shiduchim, that silence is acquiescence, means that she's accepting it as kiddushin. And in addition to that, Rashi claims that she's mochelet on the gneva or the gzela, that he no longer has to pay her back, because that's an implicit mechila there. On the other hand, the other Rishonim believe that the kiddushin go through because she acquiesces and the silence is acquiescence, but he still has to pay back the gzela. She does not forgive that gzela, but she does accept the money as money of kiddushin. Whereas in a case where there was no shiduchim between them, and there was no previous discussions or agreement that they're going to get married, and he hands it to her b'shem kiddushin, and she says nothing, she can say back to him, I didn't say anything because it's mine. I don't have to answer you. I don't have to do anything. I just got my object back, and that's why I'm taking it back. The Tosfot Ri HaZaken, therefore, is midayek out of this, about I Amra In, if she says yes, kishakibla, then afilu lo shodik miikara. Even without shiduchim, that would be good, because her saying yes is a positive affirmation of the fact that she wants the kedushin to go through. It's only a case where she's silent, can she make the claim that I'm just getting my own object back, I never accepted the kedushin, unless there's a context of kedushin. On the other hand, if she makes a positive affirmation that she's accepting the kiddushin over here, then that is kiddushin. And she's implicitly suggesting according to Rashi, that there's mechila here on the Geneva. According to the other Rishonim, you still have to pay it back. But there is kiddushin, according to that diuk of the Tosfot Riazakein. Tosfot himself notes that that might be why the Gemara didn't give an answer according to Rabbi Yochanan. Gemara could have said by Rabbi Yochanan, there's a difference between Gezel Dida and Gezel Da'achirim. Who says that Rabbi Yochanan agrees with Rav? Rabbi Yochanan is discussing a case of third-party theft. He's not talking about a case of theft from the woman herself. And maybe Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with Rav on that point. He says that you can't explain that way because the only time that works is b'shiduch. That's the Gemara's conclusion. And therefore, Tosafot says, Eishlamar, da'ad da'ani, gezel di'dach, fe'mi, gezel da'ama. The only reason to differentiate between her gezel and gezel in general is b'shodich, is because of context. Without that context, stealing from her is no different than stealing from other parties. And therefore, that distinction is not valid unless you have a shiduch. Your question is probably what drives Rashi to say that she forgave the gezelah. Because in forgiving the gezelah, then she gives him ownership over the item, and then her acceptance of the money for the kiddushin is his money that he's giving her now, and that's why Rashi might explain this way. The other Rishonim are going to have to suggest that even though he's still chayav to pay back the gezelah, what she's doing is, by accepting the kiddushin, she is, in essence, forfeiting her ownership over this particular object, over the giving of this object back as a return of the gezelah, but still he has a monetary obligation to replace the gezelah. Even though she's forfeited control or ownership over the object and accepts it as kiddushin, she still wants to be repaid for the fact that it was a stolen object. So she gives him ownership, but in essence says you're going to have to pay for that ownership. Now, Gemara brings some cases. There was this woman who was washing her feet with a kli, some sort of pitcher full of water. It's not clear why the Gemara tells the circumstances which are involved, because they don't necessarily contribute to the case. This individual came along and swiped some money from his friend. And he threw it to the woman. Get married to me with this zuz, this money that he just swiped from the other party. That person went before Rava afterwards. Amar late dechash lahad Rabbi Shimon. Damar stam gzeilua yesh be alim havi. That nobody who holds like Rabbi Shimon, that by stam gzeila there's automatic yeush balim. As Rashi explains over here, yeush comes about when the balim say vai zavadon hazeh. That it's enough, this loss is enough, you basically give up hope of getting it back, or you eat the loss, you swallow the loss, you've accepted it. So, in cases where a person has hope of getting it back, there's no yeush. In a case where a person has no hope of getting it back, there is yeush, and sometimes, as we're going to see in the Gemara in Bava Metzia, there's forced yeush. It's so obvious, or it's so out of your control, or out of your possession now, that we say that it's yeush, whether you're denying that there is yeush, because this is a circumstance where all people would give up hope because it's such a dramatic event. You have a huge flood. You have a river that washes away things. In that case, there's no hope of getting these items back. They're gone. They're gone forever. And therefore, even if you don't declare Yeush, there is Yeush automatically. So over here, that's what Rashi implies by the case of Gzela. What's the difference between Gzela and Gneva? Gneva is someone who steals undercover, because he's afraid of getting caught by the authorities. That means that this person, if he was caught by the authorities, probably would have given back the item or be forced to give back the item. So in the case of Gneva, a person does not give up hope of getting it back, and there's no Yeush. The other hand, what Rabbi Shimon suggests is Gzela, by definition, has Yeush built into it. Because the guy comes in broad daylight and swipes the item from the individual. The fact that he did it in broad daylight means that he is not afraid of the authorities. He's not afraid of having this item taken back from him. The person knows who stole from him, and yet he's still not able to extract the item back, and that's why this person doesn't worry about it, because he didn't hide his identity in any way. The fact that he didn't hide his identity means that he thinks he's above the law, and that means the person who's stolen from also knows that this person's above the law, and there's no way he's going to get this item back. And therefore, Rabbi Shimon says that there is stam yeush balim. There's an automatic yeush balim in that case, because there's no hope of return in that instance. So he says, because if there's Yehush Balima over here, where he swiped the coin from his friend in broad daylight, and he knows the identity of the thief, If we say that there's Stam Yeush Balim, then you have Yeush Balim, which is the Balim who gave up hope. You have Shinoi Rishut, which is that he gave the money to the woman in Kiddushin, and Yeush Shinoi Rishut give you a Kinyan over the object. And therefore he would have owned it, and the Kiddushin would go through. If we say there's no Yeush Balim, then it's not his to be Mekadesh the item with. That's what we already saw in the previous Samud, that when you steal something and it's not yours, and it's not the party who you're giving it to, its object, then it doesn't work. You can't be Mekadesh a woman with it, you can't be Makdisha to Ekdesh, you don't own it. But over here, if you had Yeush Balim, it would work. And so Rova responds to him, that there's nobody who subscribes to this position of Rabbi Shimon that would have made it that there was Yeush Balim over here. And if that's the case, then the Kiddushin would have gone through. But since nobody holds or nobody worries about that sheet of Rabbi Shimon, there is no Kiddushin over here. However, we saw the Kodesh B'muzah D'Shamche. There was this sharecropper who got married, Rashi over here says, with a handful of onions. The Oruch, you can see over here, brings Perush Muzah D'Shamche, Roshib Tzalim, means the heads of the onions, that he used the heads of the onions. Others say it was some vegetable refuse, whatever was not wanted. He uses that to marry the woman. After the Kamei de Rava, he came before Rava, Amar Lei Man Achalech. Rava says to him, who forgave you the ownership of the Baalim? So what happens here is he's a sharecropper. He only owns a percentage of the crop. He does not own the item outright. And so therefore, when he takes the item and then gives it to the woman, he's giving something that he doesn't necessarily own. He might own a percentage of it, but he's giving something he doesn't own. So that means, v'hani milei b'muza. That's only if he does it with the muza. Aval kisha, if he gives, the way Rashi reads it, he gives a bundle of onions, or a bundle, whatever item it is, then it would work. Or if you say that instead of it being the onion tops, he gives her the whole onion, then it'd be different. Because these are objects that are differentiated item, by which you could split with the Baalim. You could say, I'll take one, you take one. If you're talking about tops of onions, right, that's not a natural split. Or if you take a handful of onions, that's not a natural, I take a handful, you take a handful. That's not the way you split onions. If you're talking about bundles, if you're talking about natural divisions of the object, then you can claim that that's my percentage of the crop that's there. Assuming that you don't need a monetary assessment for the splitting of the partnership, he should be able to take his percentage out and give the Baalim the residual. So in a case where he takes out a percentage that would easily be definable, divisible, and then he can say to the Baalim, here's your percentage against that, or here's your piece of it against that, then it works, because then what he took is his, or he can say it is mine. So then if he takes something that is not an easily definable or divisible object, in that case, he can't say it's all mine, because the Baalim are not going to say, oh, you take those heads of the onions, I'll take these heads of the onions. That's not a natural split. Now, that's the case that he's taking onions that don't belong to him, because the Baalim are the owners of it, and even though he owns a percentage of it, it's still gzela, what he has here, and the woman doesn't know. She thinks the whole thing belongs to him. Meantime, it belongs a portion of it to the Baalim. Therefore, according to some Rishonim, if he tells her that I own a percentage of it and the other part belongs to the Baalim, it might go through, because then she knows she's only getting married with the percentage that he owns of the object. Others say that once it's Gezel, because it's the Baalim's, he can't define his percentage inside of this item, because it's only once they divide it does he get his separate piece of it. But before they divide it, he doesn't have real ownership over here. Because Kisha Matzi Amarle, Ana Shakle Kisha, Shakila At Kisha, Kisha Kikisha. He can say to the owner, I took my bundle, you take your bundle. Bundle against bundle, that's a natural way to split the field or the produce of the field. And over there, we would consider it to be his, and therefore the marriage would go through. So Rava said the marriage didn't go through because whatever he used was not his, because he didn't have a right to take it. The Baalim never gave him that right. House Sarsia. So there was this, where Rashi calls him is a beer maker, but this says date beer that he is making, because we're in Bavel. So the beer that they made there, what's plentiful are dates. And everybody, he's a date brewer. The Kaddish Bepruma Deshichra. He got married, according to Rashi, the leftovers of the dates after the liquid was taken out of them. That's what it sounds like. According to the Rif, you can see over here, he brings in the name of the Gonim, that Pruma Deshichra is Kli Katan, the small utensil that he used. Atamare Deshichra, the owner of the beer, comes along. Ashmechle, Why don't you give her from the better stuff? Why did you give her from the weaker beer or from the waste of the dates? You could have given her something much better. So, atel kamei d'rava, amar, lo amru klach etzel yafot elo yinyan truma. We only say that when the Baalim makes such a statement, it's meaningful with regards to truma. And now they bring the Tosefta from Trumot. It's a Gemara in Bava Metzi as well. The Tanya. Ketzad. Amru Toreim Shlomi Midat Trumato Trumah. What is an instance where a person takes off Trumah without the knowledge of the Balabait that it's considered to be Trumah? Now Tosefta over here claims that it's a case where he made him into a Shliach. Because if he's not an agent, what right does he have to go in there and separate out the Trumah of the Balabait? So it has to be that he has agency over here. So then what does it mean, Shlomi Dat Balabait? Meaning he didn't ask the Balabait what he wants to be mafrish, 140th, 150th, 160th, or from what produce he wants to take off the truma. But he was made an agent to take off the truma. So he goes in and does it without the knowledge of the Balabait or without the instructions of the Balabait. The Ramban supports that understanding of the Tosfot for a different reason, which is that by the case of truma, you need permission at the time of Hashrat truma in order for the truma to be truma. You can't have truma l'mafreya. And because of that, you need empowerment at the time that you're mafrish the truma. And by kiddushin, when the object is extant and the mafreya, we have permission that it was his, then the kiddushin can be chal l'mafreya. And therefore, by the case of truma, you need a permission, or you need the shliach to be appointed ahead of time. Whereas by the case of kiddushin, you don't need it to be that he has permission ahead of time. Simply a giloy milto l'mafreya, that it was his, is enough to generate the kiddushin the mafreya retroactively. Harei sheirad the toch sadecha veiro v'liket, goes down to his friend's field, picks the stuff v'taram shlo b'shut, and then he takes off the truma shlo b'shut. Again, according to Tosfot, shlo b'shut doesn't mean that he didn't have a right to take off the truma. He didn't have specific instructions about how to take off the truma, but he was a shliach. Im choshesh mishum gazel ein trumato truma. If we worry about theft here, then the truma is not truma. Bimlav chumato chuma. If not, then the chuma is fine. Umyanain hayodeim choshesh mishum gezel. Bimlav. How do we know whether it's theft or not theft? What identifies for you whether this is gezel or not? Harei sheba balabait. If the balabait comes, umitzao v'amarlo klach etzel yafot. Why did you take off of this items? You should have taken chuma from the much better stuff. Im nimtzu yafot behem. If there really are better items out there, then chumato chuma. His truma is truma. Why? Because the Balabait is basically saying, I like the fact that you took off truma, but you should have given from the better stuff. Why are you giving this lowly stuff? You could have given from the better stuff. And he's being honest, because there is better stuff. And so he's telling him, you should have taken from the better stuff. Bimlav, if there is no better stuff, ain't truma to truma, then it's not truma, because he's basically being sarcastic. Which is, why don't you take from the better stuff? There is nothing better. Meaning that he's being sarcastic with him. You took from the best stuff. Why'd you give him the best stuff? That means that the Balabait is not giving his stamp of approval to this truma, and therefore it doesn't go through. So according to Tosafot, again, the context over here is all in a case, the Shavya Shaliach. And also over here, you have to say that the case is a Shavya Shaliach, because otherwise, why can he take off truma? Other Rishonim believe that he wasn't made into a Shlech, he was an agent over here, and nevertheless, he still is taking off truma. And after the fact, we need the Baalim to give approval for the item. So the Baalim have to agree or give their stamp of approval. If they give their stamp of approval, even though it was done without their permission after the fact is what grants the right of the truma to be truma. If not, then it's not truma. But what Rova says is that this is unique to truma. The fact that we say that the Baalim after the fact can come and give their stamp of approval, and depending on whether we take it as a statement of fact or sarcastic, has to do with the context. All of that is in reference to truma. Only in truma. But in case of the sheikhar, the beer over here, where he kind of stole the dates or the beer and gave it to the woman as a present, and then the balabait comes along and says, you should have taken from the better stuff. Over there, we say that it doesn't go through because mishum kisufa hu dekamarle. Because he's embarrassed that he says it. And then the Gemara concludes, Hayu Baalim Melaktim, if the Baalim were collecting with him, Umosifim, and adding on to the Truma that he gave, Benkach Benkach Chumato Chuma, no matter what the Baalim say, then it's Chuma, because they're a party now, and they're being a party to the situation is automatic approval. Bench yeshiyafo, bench en yafo. Whether there's better stuff or not. When he says you should have given the better stuff, the fact that he adds on to the truma, it gives an implicit approval of what was truma until that point in time. But again, over here, as we noted, the whole thing is done out of embarrassment. By truma, when he gives you klachel to yafot, and there are better items, then he's being honest about it, and the truma goes through. But over here, where there are alternative reasons for him to say yes, or to say this item, is because of the embarrassment of the individual. Causes to say something that is not genuine. And because he's not genuine about it, there was no ownership. He really didn't take it. The question of what the embarrassment is it that he doesn't want to embarrass the person who did the kiddushin in front of the woman? And therefore he just says, oh, you should have taken the better stuff, because he feels bad for this individual. And therefore he says it, but he doesn't really mean it. If he doesn't mean it, then you never owned the item. If you never owned the item, then there's no kiddushin over here. The other possibility of kisufa is that he wants to embarrass the individual. You could say that. He says, why'd you take the better stuff? What are you giving this junk to this woman? And he's trying to embarrass him in that way, in order to, in a sense, imply that this guy stole from him, and what are you doing stealing my stuff? So he does it in a backhanded manner, but he tells him basically, you stole from me, what are you doing? Or you can say, mishum kisufa, is that he's too embarrassed to be, quote unquote, miserly. And to say, you know, you took the wasted dates and you used that for kiddushin, and the guy's being makbid, he's saying, where are my dates? You took my stuff. So he says, oh, you should have taken the better stuff, because he's trying to look like he's a generous soul. But that's not what he really means. He's doing it because he's compelled now, based on the circumstance, to look like a good guy and say, oh, should have got him married with the best stuff. He wants to look like a good guy. But he doesn't really mean it. He doesn't really mean to give it to you. And so therefore it doesn't work. That's what Rava says over here. Now this is what is otherwise known as She'ela Shalomidat. This is what it's called, or part of a sugya that is going to be in the Gemara and Baba Metzia. This plays a pivotal role in that discussion, which is if you borrow something without the knowledge of the owners. Where do we say that the borrowing of the item is mutar, because the owners would have given you permission anyway and it's fine? Or where do we say that that's gzela, because you took something without the permission of the owners? So this is a key part of that puzzle, because over here, that's exactly what happened. He took the dates, the waste from the beer, which he could have assumed that the balim wouldn't care about, because they want the beer. They don't care about the wasted dates afterwards. Or because he works for him and he is his brewer, of course he would give it to him. That was the assumption that was made here. Yet the Gemara says, despite that fact, when the Balim come along and say, yes, it's all Mishum Kisufa, and you really didn't own it. It was Shela Shlomidat, and it fails, and you are not the owner of it, and you do not have a right to take it because of that. That would be the conclusion from this Gemara. Gemara Mbamunsiya seems to conclude the opposite way. That when there is Shela Shlomidat, or there is an implicit approval of the Balim, that it works even outside of Truma. And that would bring up cases, which there are different deyot amongst the Rishonim, how to deal with this and how to reconcile the Gemara here with the Gemara in Baba Metzia. How you reconcile that will determine what you feel is the halacha with regards to borrowing Shlomidat, or taking things that are trivial, where people wouldn't worry about it. One of those items is, for instance, you have a box of matches that someone owns, and you want to light a cigarette. So you borrow one match to light from the item. Would the Balim be makbid on such a thing? Or is that a trivial item where they would say, fine, yeah, go ahead. If someone asked you for a match, of course you would give them a match. Or if they asked you for their lighter, of course, here, take my lighter. It's only a little lighter fluid. So when do we say that the Balim allow, or there's an implicit approval of the Balim to take the item? And where do we say no? And so that is based on how you reconcile these gemorot. The halacha, it seems to be that there is room for what we call she'ela shilomidat. And this is the cases where you're not going to return the item. You're going to utilize it and you can't return it. The match, you can't return. The lighter fluid, you can't return. But it's so trivial that people would approve. So in cases where there's already a previous relationship between the party and the owner already gave approval in past cases, you probably can assume that the same would be true in future cases. In addition, in the cases where there's a relationship that is a relationship that would make an assumption that people would share, or that would be the societal norms would be that people borrow, or they do this in a quid pro quo manner, in that case also we would suggest that there's not a problem. Once you get beyond that, it becomes much more difficult, And then you really have to look at the halacha. It's a machloket between the achronim, how to understand the gemarot and the rishonim over here. And then you start running into problems when you borrow something without permission, or you take something without permission, whether that is okay, or whether you are, in essence, stealing from the individuals. And the question comes up in difficult situations, for instance, where you go to a wedding, and you decide to pack up the meal from the wedding. You say, you know what, bring me the meal, I can't eat here, pack it up for me. The question is, what would they do with the meal otherwise? And what would be the feeling of the balim? Do they say, go ahead and take it because they paid for it anyway, and they're going to throw it out? Or do the leftovers go to the balei simcha, and they would keep it if you didn't take it? Or do they only want you to take the meal because you're there celebrating with them? They don't want everybody coming, taking their meals and going home with the meals, because they want you to eat with them and celebrate with them. So all of those factors would play into whether you would have to ask permission to take it, or whether it would be an assumed societal norm that you could take such an item. So yeah, same thing as borrowing a pen. Is that a trivial enough item? Most likely yes. That most people, if you had to borrow a pen to sign something, most people would say, fine, yeah, go ahead, take the pen and borrow it. You probably wouldn't have to ask for permission. One exception with that rule is has to do with divrei mitzvah, which is brought down that when there is an item where you can do a mitzvah, that nechale leinish asot mitzvah b'mune. The people want mitzvah to be done with their money, and therefore there is the halacha, which is brought down, that if you come into a shul and you don't have a talit and tefillin, and you see talit and tefillin there, you're allowed to take the talit and tefillin and put them on. There are a number of caveats to that. First of all, you're not allowed to take it out of the shul. You have to keep it in the shul. Number two is, you have to put it back exactly the way that you found it. I mean, that if it was folded and put away, you have to return it and put it back exactly the way that they rolled it. You have to be careful about that and return it to its place. And you also, it has to be used in a manner that doesn't cause any damage or detrimental impact on the item, where the balim would be makpid on you using it. But otherwise, you can walk into a shul and there's an assumed permission to use the sfarim that are there, to use the talit and tefillin that are left there, assuming that you comply with all the caveats that are noted. So again, we could discuss it more when we deal with the main sugya, which is in Baba Metzia. Right, the Mishnah says here, a mekadesh b'chalko, person who does kiddushin with his portion, ben kodshim kodoshim, ben kodshim kalim, this is the Kohen's portion of the kodoshim, it doesn't work. Again, we'll get to it in the Gemara as to why that's not the case. Tosafot notes over here that the chelko that he's using, even if he uses what's called the tovat hana'ah, he's not necessarily using the meat of the kodeshim itself to marry the woman, but his ability to control who eats it. He can give it to whomever he wants. And therefore, he has monetary rights in the giving of that item. And as Tosafot points out, in other places we find that if a person does something where people would pay for that right, that's enough consideration to generate kiddushin, and the same should be true over here. If he has a right to give it to whomever he wants to eat, a kohen would pay him for that right in order to have this meat or this kodshim. So why isn't that enough consideration to marry the woman with? The answer Tosafot gives in the end is because mishulchan gavah kazochu, that when they're eating from the kodoshim that are here, it's not their kodoshim, it belongs to God. And they're just visitors or guests here. A guest can't sell their portion to another guest at the table. And therefore, even if there is tovat hana'ah, the tovat hana'ah doesn't belong to them, it belongs to God. And for that reason, there's not enough consideration, there is no consideration over here for them to marry with this tovat hana'ah or with the kodoshim themselves. B'maser shini, in maser shini, ben shogeg ben mezit lo kidesh divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says, whether it was done intentionally, unintentionally, whether you knew it was maser shini, you didn't know maser shini, you were mekadesh the isha with it, it does not work according to Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Meir, b'shogeg lo kidesh, if it was unintentional, it doesn't work. B'mezid kidesh, if you do it intentionally, then it does work. B'hektesh, if you use something that's mukdash to Hashem. B'mezid kidesh, if you do it intentionally, it works, because then you basically were mo'el, and you misappropriated hektesh, and it becomes yours in that case. B'shogeg lo kidesh, on the other hand, if it was shogeg, it doesn't work. Devei Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda Meir, b'shogeg kidesh, just the opposite. B'shogeg, it works. B'mezid, lo kidesh, it doesn't work. Again, the Gemara will discuss all of these issues. Neima matznitzin delok Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Let us say our Mishnah is not like the sheet of Rabbi Yossi Aglili. D'tanya. Umala maul b'ashem. That you were mo'el. You basically stole from Hashem, or you were an affront to Hashem. There are both kochim kalim, shehein me'mono. To tell you that kochim kalim are included in this din, because they are your money, divrei Rabbi Yossi Aglili. The case that he's speaking about there is a shvu'ah, taking a shvu'ah, and it says, v'kichesh ba'amito, that the person denied owing the money or having the pikadon of another party, takes a shvu'ah, and then he's found to be lying. In that case, he has to bring a kurban, a sham v'zelot, and he also has to pay a chomesh in addition. He has to pay back the money plus the chomesh. That punishment is only v'kichesh ba'amito, where he denied it to a friend. Hekdesh is not your amito, is not your friend. And therefore, hekdesh is excluded from this din. Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, there it says, umala ma'u b'ashem. That ma'u ma'u b'ashem keeps the teacher that even when there's something belonging to Hashem, there's still a din of shvuah. He says that that's talking about kochim kalim. That kochim kalim, when you're talking about lighter forms of hekdesh, kurbanot, where you can eat them anywhere in Yerushalayim, those kochim kalim are mimono, is your money. Whether it's the part that belongs to the Kohen or the basar that goes to the Baalim, it's their money and they can do what they please with it. Tiber Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Filu teima Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Gemara says, no, our mission can be even according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Kikama Rabbi Yossi Aglili michayim. That's only when the animal is still alive. I mean that when it is a shlamim, and when it is a todah, or when it is a pesach, a maser, a bechor, which are all kochim kalim, all those items, while they're still alive, they're your mamon. But, avalachar shchita, once you shech them, lo, that's not the case. My taima, kikazachu mishulchan gavoa kazachu, because there you're just eating from Hashem's table. It belongs to Hashem. He's inviting you as a guest to partake of that which belongs to Him. So prior to shchita, it's yours, and therefore, if you use it, it's your money to use. You might have to replace it. You might have to deal with stealing from Ekdesh, whatever that is. But it's your money to do what you want with it, and you're responsible for it also. Meaning that if it's stolen, it's your money that is stolen. On the other hand, it also gives you the right to use it as money, and that's why you can get married with it. But if it's after Shechita, Shechita already brings it into the auspices of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore anything that you have afterwards, whether it's the Hazen Shok of the Kohen or the Basar of the Balim, you are eating from God's table. You're like a guest on God's table, and you're eating from Him, and even Rabbi Yossi Aglili agrees with that. Dekanami, and you can be Medayek that of our Mishnah, Dekani, of Mekadesh, Bechelko, his portion, Ben Kodshim Kodashim, Ben Kodshim Kalim Lo Kidesh, that doesn't work. The portion that you're speaking about is not pre-Shechita, that's already after Shechita, because it's your portion. You don't get a portion while the animal's alive, your portion is only after Shechita. That shows you that our Mishnah is discussing a case after Shechita, and if it's after Shechita, even Rabbi Yossi Aglili agrees, and that's why our Mishnah can fit even according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Shma Mina. The fact that the Gemara here says, Mishulchan Kavoa Kazochu, applying both to the Kohanim and to the Baalim, is not so clear based on the Gemara of Baba Kama, which is the main sugya that relates to this. And in the sugya of Baba Kama, it seems that the Gemara comes to a different conclusion. And therefore, there are three different ways to deal with that. There are Rishonim who believe that our Gemara is nitchet in the Gemara of Baba Kama. There are others who say that our Gemara is accepted by the Gemara of Baba Kama, but they reconcile between the two in some manner or fashion. And others who suggest that even though the Gemara Baba Kama rejects this understanding, it does not reject the fact that the Baalim, when they eat from the Kodashim, are also Mishulchan Kavoa Kazachu. So, depending on how you read the Gemara Baba Kama, will have influence on whether, in the end, we do say that the Baalim's portion of the Kodashim are also Mishulchan Kavoa Kazachu, and not just the Kohanim. So, according to our Gemara, it's clear that that is the case. How you reconcile that with the Gemara Baba Kama will determine whether the Maskona, we also say that about the portion of the Baalim. Right, Tanu Banan, Lachar Ptirato Shel Rabbi Meir. After Rabbi Meir passed away, Amar Lahem Rabbi Yehuda Tamidav, Al Yikansu Tamidei Rabbi Meir Lekan. The students of Rabbi Meir should not come and join us over here. So we have this story in Nazir as well. This exact same story. Mipnei Shikantaranaim Haim. Because they are argumentative, but not just argumentative, they want to prove their point. We know that Rabbi Meir, based on the Gemara, is very sharp. And the reason Halacha is not like Rabbi Meir in many cases is because he was too sharp. And they were not able to be Yorei B'Sof Dato. They could not understand Rabbi Meir's position, or Rabbi Meir could prove his point no matter what his point was. And therefore, there was no beating Rabbi Meir. But if that's the case, that means that we never know when Rabbi Meir is right or not, because nobody else could understand him. His Talmidim, obviously, were a derivative of Rabbi Meir, and they also had this sharpness to them and this ability to prove their position. So Rabbi Yehuda says, don't let them into the Beit Midrash, because they're just going to come and disagree with me, or argue in favor of Rabbi Meir's position, and I'm going to be in a difficult bind. They're not coming to learn by me. They are coming to catch me and say, you're wrong. So if they were coming to learn from me, that's one thing. But if they're just coming to prove that Rabbi Meir is right, and to be argumentative and difficult, contentious in their manner, and challenge me, I don't want them here. Dokach Sumchus v'nechnas. Sumchus was a Talmid of Rabbi Meir, who was found in the Mishnah in many places. He went in there. Amar lehem, kach shanali Rabbi Meir. This is what Rabbi Meir taught me. Hamikadesh b'chelko ben kodshim kadashim ben kodshim kalim lo kidesh. That a person who gets married with his portion, whether it's kodshim kadashim ben kodshim kalim, lo kidesh, it doesn't work like our Mishnah, meaning the Rabbi Meir is a stam Mishnah, so this is the position of Rabbi Meir. Kas Rabbi Yehuda alehem. Rabbi Yehuda got angry of his talmidim. Malehem lo kacha marta lechem. Al yikansu talmidei Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Meir lekan. Don't let the talmidei Rabbi Meir in here. Because they're just contentious and argumentative. They're not coming to learn. They're trying to undermine my positions, which is, this is one of them, that they are coming in and upholding the position of Rabbi Meir. And he answers back, what's the woman doing in the Azara? So that's Rabbi Yehuda's answer. It says, Kodshei Kodashim. And Kodshei Kodashim can only be eaten inside the Azara. So what you're saying here, that the reason it doesn't work is because you can't use your chelek. The answer to the reason it can't work over here is because the woman is never there. The Rashi claims over here, "Benashim einich nasola." Women cannot enter into the Azara, and it's not about vote atumot, but perek kama de Masechet Kelim. As is noted in the first perek of Masechet Kelim, the first perek of Masechet Kelim talks about different levels of kedusha, starting with kedusha ta'aretz versus chutz la'aretz. Dushab, walled cities versus non-walled cities, so on and so forth. Yerushalayim, the Harabayit, then the Azarot, and then the Kodesh HaKodeshim. In each one of the cases, it talks about the levels of Dushab that are there. In those levels, Rashi claims that women are precluded from entering into the Azara. Tosfot says, Lo dak, delo ashkachan b'shum duchta nashim asru l'kenes b'azara. Rashi was not so particular or careful, because we don't have any evidence of the fact that women cannot enter into the Azara. Tosfot goes on to prove that we find instances where the women do come into the Azara. If she's a Sota, if she's a Nazira, she has to come to do the Tnufa, the wave offering, inside of the Azara. Or in cases where we allow women to do Shechita, the women can do Shechita, it has to be done in the Azara. In all those cases, women are permitted to enter into the Azara. What Rashi will say is that's only because there's a reason for them to be in the Azara. But there's no reason for them to be in the Azara that would preclude them from entering into the Azara. So, but Tosfot in the end says that the reason or the problem here is v'nir ali v'chi shab be'azara li'itkadesh minayin. Re'en rigilot shitkadesh l'shem k'dei li'itkadesh. People don't go into the Azara to get married. Shari bizayonu. It is a denigration of the kedusha of the Azara for a woman to go in there to get married and have a kohen propose to her. And there, milta d'lo shchichai. It's something that's uncommon. V'lo ari tana mizer. Our tana can't be speaking about that case. So if we're literally talking about the chelik of the Kodshei Kodashim, then how could you be talking about a woman that's going to the Azara to get married, because that's the only place where you can use Kodshei Kodashim. So Amar Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi is another peer here. We have Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi. Yomru Meir Shachaf. Rabbi Meir passed away. Yehuda Kaas. Rabbi Yehuda got angry. Yossi Shatak. And Rabbi Yossi sat there silently. Divrei Torah Matei Aleah. What's going to happen to Divrei Torah? And now he answers, V'chi ein adam asur lekabel kiddushin lebito ba'azara. Who says that the woman has to go in order for there to be kiddushin? Could be her father that's accepting her on behalf of his daughter, who's a ketana or nara. V'ein isha usiyah lasod la'shliach lekabel kiddushin ba'azara. Or it could be in the case where the woman appointed the kohen as a proxy to accept on her behalf. So you can have a situation in which the woman can get married in the Azara, and she doesn't have to be present there. Vote, dachaka v'nichnasa. Or a case where she went in, even though she shouldn't be there, she went in anyway. According to Tosafot, despite the fact that it's improper to get married there, she went in. According to Rashi, where a woman's not allowed to enter the Azara, she went in anyway. So now she's there. Okay, fine. She'll have to deal with whatever the ramifications are there, repercussions of that. Doesn't invalidate the kiddushin that are done. So Mai, what's the din? So Tanya, we have a bright Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mikudeshet. It goes through, and that's obviously why he was upset about Sumchus coming in and saying, Rabbi Meir says that there's no such thing as a marriage over here, because he believes that the marriage goes through. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Eina Mikudesh. Rabbi Yossi seems to agree with Rabbi Meir and says that there is no Kiddushin. And Rabbi Yochanan, Shnei Mikra Echad Darshu. They both dash in the same Pasuk, which is, Zeh Yelecha Mikodesh HaKodeshim Min HaEsh. This will belong to you from the Kodeshei HaKodeshim, from the fire. In Parshat Korach, where it lists off the Matnot Kinuna, over there it tells you that they get their portion of the Kodeshei HaKodeshim that belong to them from the fire, from the Mizbeach. Rabbi Yudah Savar Lecha says, Zeh Yelecha, it's yours. The Chol Tarkecha, you can do what you please with it. It's yours, so you do as you please with it, and that means it's your mamon. If you want to get married with it, fine, go ahead and get married with it. Yossi Savar, Keish, like the fire, my ish l'achila, afhu namid achila. Just like the fire on the Mizbeach, the only thing you can do with on the Mizbeach is put it on the Mizbeach to be consumed by the Mizbeach. So too, the Kohen only has a right to consume the Kodashim. He has no right to do anything else with it. Based on this, there is a slight difference between the Shita of Yossi and Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Yossi Shita relies on the fact that it's a Gzeirat HaKatuv, that it's only la'achila, whereas the Shita of Rabbi Meir seems to rely on the fact that Mishulchan Gevoah Kazochu, and that it doesn't belong to them because of Shulchan Gevoah. So that means that the reasoning behind their positions is different, which is that Rabbi Yossi believes that it is only for achila and not for anything else, and that's the Gzeirat HaKatuv. Whereas Rabbi Meir believes that Mishulchan Gevoah Kazochu, and they have no rights, they have no ownership in this item. According to Rabbi Yossi, they do have ownership in the item, but it's ownership for a particular purpose, which is that of achila. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, nimnu v'gamru, ha-mekadesh b'chalko, ben kodshi kodashim, ben kodshim kalim, lo kidesh. That the halacha is like Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, that the kiddushin do not go through. Rav Amar, adayin machloket. And Rav says it's still a machloket, and that we do not have any clarification of this. The din, lo ichriu bazeh, and Rabbi Yehuda was not chuzer, did not change his mind about this position. And tomorrow we'll discuss Abaye's position as to whether Rabbi Yochanan or Rabbi Av's position makes more sense. We're going to stop here, 3 lines down on the top of Nub Gimel Amud Aleph.